entertainment, sports, and radio's best guest list. Live from the Zone Radio Studios on Broadway on WZON Z62, WKIT HD3, and at downtownwithrichkimble.com. This is Downtown.
Hello there. Good morning. Welcome in to the Best of Downtown on this last day of March. Best of Downtown brought to you every Sunday, like the show is every Monday through Friday, by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. Rich Kimble, Carrie Haskell here with you, and man, have we got a good collection of guests for you on this week's show. A couple of folks who made their name in television and film, and one who played on one of the most remarkable world championship teams in the history of Major League Baseball. Burt Ward, the original Robin on the Batman television series coming up. Actor Steve Guttenberg from the Police Academy movies, Cocoon, Diner, Three Men and a Baby. But first, we talk a little baseball and look back 50 years to the 1969 season and the Miracle Mets. One member of that team was Art Shamsky, who's gone on to have a successful career in sports media as well. He's got a brand new book out called After the Miracle that not only looks back at that season, but also chronicles a reunion of some of the members of that team. We had a great time talking with After the Miracle author and former New York Met, Art Shamsky. Before I talk about the book, I have to ask a personal question. When I was 8 years old, back in the 1960s, did you have a special deal going with the people at Topps? Because I swear, every package of baseball cards I opened, I got an Art Shamsky.
I don't know if if that's good or bad, to tell you the truth. No, I didn't have anything special, but I hope you saved them.
I did, absolutely. No, I loved them.
I'll make an offer to you. I'll buy them all for $1.
Oof, well, I may have to hold out for a little more than that. Art, I absolutely love this book. Now, obviously, here in New England, Red Sox fans, but every baseball fan was captured by that 1969 Mets team and that amazing story. I thought I knew the team pretty well, but I was surprised right away in the book by the role of Whitey Herzog, who was a huge part of that team's success.
Yeah, Whitey was the head of the minor league system at the time, and really helped develop some of the young players who went on to be the stars of the Mets. And I had a little bit of experience dealing with Whitey, and always a fair guy, and then went on to be a great manager in major leagues. And I was surprised that at one time after Gil Hodges passed away that he didn't get an opportunity to manage the Mets. Don't know the reasons why, but it was interesting to me because he was such a good baseball man, as proven by what he accomplished as managers in later years. But Whitey was a terrific guy, and interviewed him in the book also. Got a chance to talk to him about those young players that he saw, the Kuzmans and the Nolan Ryans and Kenny Boswells and all those young guys. So he was instrumental in a way for our success that year.
Everybody in the book, all of your teammates speak with such reverence and respect for Gil Hodges and the remarkable job that he did. And it started right away when he told you guys flat out that losing isn't funny.
Well, when he joined the team in 1968, that was my first year. Also, along with Tommy Agee and Al Weiss, J.C. Martin, a few of us came over that winter over to the Mets, and that was Gil's first year as a manager. And I'll never forget that first day. And Gil was a very tough, stern, disciplinarian guy, ex-Marine. He was always seemed serious. And he said, just want to let you guys know you will not be the same old Mets that you've been. And, I was my first year, so I couldn't take the blame for those early years when they were known as the lovable losers. But we knew right away that Gil was serious. And he really was the catalyst behind our success. Not so much that year because we finished ninth, a half game out of last place, but you could see signs that we were going to be an improving ball club, and he really was the catalyst. He was the kind of manager that managed by feel. In other words, there was no printouts about our sabermetrics or anything like that. He knew what every guy on the team could do. He got everybody involved. He platooned in a lot of positions, and he made everybody feel like they were an important part of the team. And the success of that team in 1969 was really because of Gil Hodges.
And all of you on the team also stayed very close with his widow as well.
Yeah, she's still around, Mrs. Hodges, and I think she's about 93 at this point. Still lives in the same house that they lived in Brooklyn. And a beautiful lady. I actually think she's throwing out the first pitch on the fourth. I don't think she's going to throw it. I think her son, Gil Jr., is going to throw out the first pitch, first home game, April 4th at Citi Field. So she's still around, and she's still trying to get Gil in the Hall of Fame. And I, for one, have tried to do whatever I could to help in that regard. I do think he should be in it based on his playing career and managing the Mets. But it's a strange phenomenon. Who knows? But she's still got her hopes for that.
We're talking with Art Chamsky on Downtown about his book, After the Miracle. And as you recount that 69 season, one of the key moments for you was the acquisition of a guy who made a big difference in the middle of that lineup in Don Clendenin.
Yeah, Don was a big, strong first baseman, right-hand hitter, which we needed. He came over in, I think, the second week in June. And he was really a tremendous asset. He ended up platooning at first base with Eddie Cranepool. We were still, though, going into August, not a great ball club. We were 9 games behind the Cubs going into August, and that was the first year of division play. And we were in the National League East. But Don was a tremendous asset to the team, and he was really a catalyst, and as witnessed by what he accomplished in the World Series. He was a World Series MVP. But we needed somebody like him, and it was frustrating for all of us who were getting platooned at first base and right field. I was with Ron Svoboda at second base, third base, and at sometimes behind the plate with Jerry Brody and J.C. Morton. But it was working, and we respected Gil so much. Nobody liked it. It wasn't a great situation. But when we all got an opportunity to play, we all produced that year. And we didn't like it, but it was working, so we accepted it. But Gil had this way of making everybody feel like they were part of the team, and I think that's really to his credit.
You got some signs fairly early in the season that this was going to be a different type of year. Was it that win streak in late May and early June that made you guys believe things were different?
Yeah, I think that's true. Even though, as I said, going into August, we were still 9 games behind the Cubs, but we saw signs. In the season that we knew that we were a better ball club than in 68, and also that our record showed. And really, there was no secret. I think basically it came down to us finding ways to win close games. I mean, we found ways to lose close games, but we were always going to be, for the most part, we're always going to be in the games because we had Tom Seaver, we had Jerry Kuzman, we had Nolan Ryan, we had Gary Gentry, Tug McGraw. I mean, we had a great pitching staff and good defense. And we were going to be in close games, but we needed to find ways to win those close games. And we did. As the season went on, we'd win one game here, one game there. But we had winning streaks that gave us signs that we were going to be a really good ball club. But I'm really telling you from the truth that I remember is that from the middle of August on, we were almost unbeatable. I think we finished 9 or 10 games ahead of the Cubs, so there was a swing of like 18 games. And we beat a really terrific Atlanta Brave team in the playoffs, and then a very talented Baltimore Oriole team in the World Series. There's a little bit of trivia for you. I actually made the last out of the only game we lost in the World Series, game 1. And I don't know if that means anything, except I think about that at bat every day of my life. But we lost that game, and we still had confidence because Jerry Kuzman was pitching the second game. And he ended up pitching a great game, a no-hitter for 6 innings. And we won that game. We came back to New York 1-1. If we would have lost the second game and been 0-2, who knows what would have happened. We might have lost 4 in a row. But Jerry pitched a great game. We're 1-1. We come back to New York, and then we win the next 3, and the rest is history.
Well, and you say, and your teammates all say in the book, that as great as Tom Seaver was that year, if you needed a guy to win one game, it would have been a tough choice with all of you, whether you go with Seaver or Jerry Kuzman.
Well, they both were terrific pitchers. I mean, Seaver had the great year. He was a Cy Young winner, and you couldn't take anything away from him. I've always said that Seaver was Van Gogh and Kuzman was Patton. I mean, they were complete opposite kinds of pitchers, but both very effective. Tom, of course, history will show he's one of the greatest pitchers to ever pitch in the major leagues. But Jerry, on any given day, was as good as anybody. And when you needed a game to win, he was right there, and he would battle you, and he would fight you, and he would find ways to win. And he was just a great pitcher, and he was the perfect second pitcher behind Tom Seaver that year. And He went on to have a great career also. He was a terrific left-handed pitcher.
Well, the book is wonderful, and the recounting of the 69 season is a great joy to look back on once again. But to me, what elevates this book and makes it something really special is the story of the journey and the reunion that you organized with some of your teammates, Kuzman, Bud Harrelson, Ron Swoboda, to go out and visit Tom Seaver in California.
Yeah, but we knew at the time, this is 2 years ago, and we knew at the time Tom wasn't doing much traveling, if any. And I wanted to write a book. I wrote it with a terrific writer by the name of Eric Sherman, who has written some really good books on the Mets and other things. And we talked about it, and I said, you know, Eric, I don't want to write a book that's just about day-to-day things that happened during the season. This is the 50th anniversary of that team. Let's do something special. And I didn't want to interview Tom on the phone, and we knew he wasn't 100%, so we decided to roll the dice and put together a group of guys, some teammates, and go out there, not even knowing if we were going to be able to see him, because when I talked to him, he said, you know, my memory's not great, but talk to my wife and let's schedule it and see what we can do. And when I talked to her, she said, Art, you know, Tom has good days and bad days. If you get out here, it could be a bad day and you might not even be able to see him. But we rolled the dice. We went out there and met with him. It happened to be a good day, and it was a revelation for all of us to sit down and reminisce and tell the stories and talk about that year and that season. There's no doubt October 16th, 1969 changed all of our lives who were part of that team. So many things have happened, and so much good stuff has come out of that team. And when we sat down with Tom and reminisced, it was so great to talk about things that were important to all of us. And the book really is about that trip. It's not just about Tom Seaver. It's about all the guys on the team. But it's about the trip out there. And what the book really represents is a camaraderie, love for your teammates, and also about aging. You know, it's been 50 years, and life is funny. The aging process takes place, but we still have the memories, and we can talk about things that were really important to us. And I think the thing that's really really important for us to remember is that we made people, collectively as a team, we made people feel better about their lives. It was a time in this country with the war in Vietnam, with the assassinations, with all sorts of problems in New York City, that we made people feel better about their lives in a sense that they could forget about all their problems and really follow us and grab onto us. And it's for us who were part of that team, it's always great to hear those stories. And I think people have passed that on from generation to generation. Kids who weren't even born know about that team because people have said how great we were and how we made people feel better about their lives at the time. And I think that's really an important factor to understand why this team resonates with so many people over so many years, is that we made people feel better about certain things in their life. And that's the best thing you could say about being an athlete, when you can make people feel better about their lives.
Well, and you guys, you and your teammates also modeled a behavior that we could all stand to see more of in America. And I think specifically of Jerry Kuzman and Ron Swoboda, who could not be more far apart politically and give each other a hard time, but ultimately show their love and respect for each other on this journey.
That's exactly true. I wanted those two guys to come with us because I was really ready to instigate every minute we were spent together. I would say something about Ronnie's political views, and then Kuzman would jump in and start arguing with him. I would then say something about Kuzman's political views, and Swoboda would jump in, and it was just magical to get those guys going again. But it was part of the plan to have those two guys, and then Buddy Harrelson was the third member, who has already announced that he's in early stages of Alzheimer's, and to get him out there and see Tom, who was his roommate, during his playing days, and for them to sit down and talk, it was just wonderful. But you were right about those two guys, Swoboda and Kuzman, two opposite ends of the political spectrum, but great guys and fun guys to be with. But I agitated them a little bit.
One of my favorite stories in the book, can you share a little bit of the story that Tom Seaver told you about Gil Hodges asking him whether or not he noticed his wife sitting in the stands during games?
Well, Gil was you know, Mrs. Hodges and Gil had this wonderful relationship, and she still lives in the same house they lived in Brooklyn. And And I think Tom made some bad pitches in one game, which was very rare. But Gil called him into the office the next day, and he said, "Did you notice if your wife was at the game?" And to make a long story short, I mean, the whole story was about Tom taking on this new perspective about respect and admiration for Gil, but also noting that his wife was very important to him and his career, and it turned out to be very true.
Of course, Tom Seaver's wife, Nancy, the family has come out recently with news about Tom's condition. Have you talked to either Nancy or Tom since the book came out?
I did. The book came out Tuesday, and I haven't talked to her in about a month. And when I did talk to her, she said he was doing okay. So I assumed that he was either status quo or hadn't gotten much worse than when he was. And when I say worse, it wasn't that he couldn't communicate. He had Lyme disease for over 20 years, and I think this Lyme disease really kind of affected certain aspects of his mental state and his physical state. And he told us out there he wasn't going to be traveling anymore. He wasn't going to be coming back to New York for anything. No more baseball things. He just wanted to enjoy his life with his family and take care of his wine acres that he has out in California. He loved doing that, and that was what he was going to do the rest of his life. Now, I haven't really talked to him since we were out there, but I have had some conversation with her. And I just, you know, I have to hope. I like to use the word is with Tom as opposed to was. I hope that he is okay and can lead a relatively normal life. I know he's not going to be making appearances, but I just hope that he is around for a long, long time and that and the people. I just heard today that the Mets are going to build a statue or put a statue up about of him at the stadium, and they're going to name a street right along Citi Field also. So these are wonderful things that happened to him, and I hope he's around and can enjoy that whole process.
Absolutely. Well, Art, I love the book. It's a wonderful baseball book, but also a very poignant story about the power of friendship and aging and bonds that last over the course of many, many decades. We congratulate all of you on the 50th anniversary of that memorable season that Mets fans or not, everybody was caught up in, and it's been great talking with you. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Rich. It was great. Thank you so much.
Art Chamsky talking about his terrific new book, After the Miracle, here on The Best of Downtown. When we come back, get your bat gear ready. The Boy Wonder, Burt Ward of Batman, straight ahead on The Best of Downtown.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference, with a limited warranty that's 3 times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free main state inspections for the life of the vehicle, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
It may not be prime biking season, but it's always a good time to make sure your cycle is in great shape. And there's only one place to go to do that. Slipping Gears Cycling, 753 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Bangor's only full-time cycling sales and service experts. They offer outstanding service and a huge stock. Make sure you like them on Facebook to get updates, shop in person or online at slippinggears.com.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security...
Pretty sure this should be considered a public service announcement. So in advance, you're welcome. I just went to the Ground Round in Bangor and had the most amazing food from their special menu. First, I got the Reuben egg rolls, which is all the flavors of the classic Reuben sandwich wrapped in a crispy egg roll and served with savory garlic smoky paprika sauce that has this slight kick. It's so good. To go with it, I ordered the Memphis fries, French fries loaded with pulled pork, drizzled with barbecue sauce, topped with chopped pickles and diced onions. If your mouth is watering right now, head to the Ground Round on Audlin Road in Bangor. GroundRound.com.
Success. For some, it's the result of luck. For the Maine Black Bears, it's the result of planning, determination, and hard work. Success may have brought you financial rewards, and now in many ways, life isn't simpler, it's more complex. Your choices impact more people and can have longer-lasting effects than ever before. At ClearPoint Financial, we understand your challenges. We can help navigate today's changing financial landscape and help you pursue your financial goals. ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
Hi, this is Mike Toole. See what ClearPoint Financial can do for you. Call us today at 307-7718.
Welcome to Greenacres Kennel Shop. How many?
Two dogs and a cat, please.
Remember us?
Rex, Sparky, and me, Fiona.
Of course, this way. Your coats are all looking so shiny. Bowl for three.
Ruff!
I'll take a side plate. Dog food's not really my taste.
Rex, try the Nutrisource. Delectable.
Yes, Master Sparky. Greenacres Kennel Shop only wants you to have wholesome, healthy food. So we prefer to work with small, family-owned companies who focus on pet foods.
Any specials this evening, Paul?
Of course, Master Rex. The usual lineup of dog and cat foods from Pure Vita, Natural Planet Health Extension, Signature.
How are they prepared?
Greenacres offers dry food, wet, freeze-dried, even frozen raw food to fulfill your fussy feline fancy. Now, because you all come to Greenacres Kennel Shop so often, your meals are deeply discounted as part of our frequent buyer program.
Wow, sounds like we're the special ones.
Greenacres Kennel Shop, where every pet is special. 1653 Union Street, Bangor, greenacreskennel.com, and on Facebook. Takeout also available.
We love Greenacres Kennel Shop, our home away from home.
Downtown is brought to you every day by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, 557 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Presenting the best in new releases with completely renovated theaters and stadium seating, Bangor Mall Cinemas is the best place around to see your favorite films. Don't forget Golden Ticket Tuesdays, where everyone 62 and older can get it for just $7 for regular features. With Dolby Surround Sound, a digital surround, easy access from I-95, and the most comfortable theater experience around, visit Bangor Mall Cinema 10, 557 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, where they have a film for everyone in the family.
Well, in 1966, a television series took the nation by storm. Batman became so popular that it actually aired twice a week on ABC. One of the reasons was the work of our next guest on The Best of Downtown, Burt Ward, who at 20 years old played the boy wonder Robin to Batman, played, of course, by Adam West. We had a chance to talk recently with Bird about the making of the series, his memories, experiences there, and also about the wonderful work he and his wife Tracy have done to improve the lives of dogs over the last few decades. Does it still make you scratch your head that people remain so fascinated with this tremendous show from over 50 years ago?
No, I fully understand why. I mean, when Batman came out, January 12, 1966, we were unlike any other television show in history. Number one, we had a completely broad appeal for the kids. It was the hero worship of, you know, superheroes and them riding in the Batmobile, climbing walls, fighting heinous villains. And for the adults, it was the nostalgia of the comic book. And for the teenagers and college kids that were a really tough audience to reach at that point, it was the comic, the campy style, the subtle double meanings and all the suggestiveness we did. So that was a big appeal. But also, I think what was even a bigger appeal was the fact that the first time in television history, instead of the audience just kind of like a third party watching the action, that we really reached through the television set to affect people directly. We used to say that we put on our tights to put on the world. And because we went directly at the audience, with all the kinds of things we did, you know, I think it was the very basis of what now you have with all these successful, you know, superhero movies, not just Batman, but Superman and Marvel movies, all these fantastic movies where not only do they have superheroes, but if you look at the interaction between the actors right in the middle of the most dangerous things, like one could turn to another and just have some, you know, small comment. Well, you know, I don't like the fire, you know, whatever it might be. You see what I mean?
Well, yeah.
I think it doesn't surprise me, in other words.
Well, you guys were the template in so many ways, and I think the most successful of those franchises that have continued have also borrowed from you guys the humor that was such a big part of it.
Right. That humor. So right, in the, you know, like I remember one of my lines where we came in on the against the villain, and there was all these henchmen here, and I looked at Batman. I said, "Batman, there's eight of them against two of us. Odds in our favor."
Well, the show can still be seen everywhere. I love catching it on cable. And one of the things that is remarkable, obviously it holds up, but it looks so good. That visual style was so unique, and those shows look fantastic today.
Well, and in color, you know. I mean,
right.
This was right when color first came out, and Batman was probably the most colorful show you could possibly imagine. You look at our outfits, Batman and Robin, and look even at the villains' outfits, and the look at the villains' hideouts with, you know, where secret hideout, all these markings, you know, secret entrance, all of these things, you know. It was just this wild, campy style. But look at the pows and the zaps with the fight scenes, the Batman theme music. I mean, people just went nuts. They loved it.
Well, and you got an amazing group of guest stars, and once the show became such a huge success, seemingly everybody in Hollywood wanted to be a part of it.
Absolutely. And the problem was there wasn't enough different villain roles to accommodate so many people. That's why the producers set up that segment of each of our shows where Batman and Robin are climbing up the wall, and then a window opens with some very famous celebrity like Sammy Davis Jr., Jerry Lewis, Don Ho, Betty White, Colonel Klink, Lurch. I mean, it goes on and on and on of all these people, and it, you know, everybody just loved it. And for the actors, oh my gosh, the pressure from their children to get on our show was immense.
We're talking with Burt Ward here on Downtown. Now, what people may not know is that it was also a pretty dangerous show, and you often bore the brunt of that, having to do a number of stunts yourself, and you spent more than a few days in the emergency room early on. Is that right?
Well, actually, four of the first 6 days of filming, I visited the emergency ward of the hospital unexpectedly. I had never even been to an emergency ward. It was because, well, I'll give you an example. Day one, right in the very beginning, very first shot, day one, Bronson Canyon, the famous scene coming out of the Batmobile, where I got dressed, got the makeup on. They said, okay, Bert, go into the cave, get in the Batmobile, and we're going to shoot this scene. So I get in the Batmobile, I look over, and at first I thought it was Adam dressed as Batman, but as my eyes began to focus in the dim light, I could see that it wasn't Adam. And I said, well, who are you? And the guy said, I'm Hubie. I said, oh, well, why are you here? He says, because this is a very dangerous shot, and the studio doesn't want to take a chance of Adam West getting hurt. I said, oh, well, that's good. And then I started to think for a minute. I said, well, wait a minute. Do I have a stuntman? He said, oh, yeah, you have one. I said, oh, well, that's good, too. Well, where is he? Oh, he's over having coffee with Adam last time I saw him. Well, wait a minute. If this is that really dangerous, why isn't he doing it? So I don't know. So now I can hear him roll it up, getting ready to start. I said, wait, whoa, 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 there's a terrible mistake here. And the second assistant director comes over and says, Bert, what is it? What is it? You know? And I said, I mean, this man tells me this is a dangerous stunt. He says, yeah, it is. And he says that I have a stuntman who's having coffee with Adam. Yeah, what's that got to do with you? Well, why isn't he sitting here for this dangerous shot instead of me? Oh, we can't use him. I said, you can't use him? Why? Well, he doesn't look like you. Oh, my God. You hire a stuntman to be my stuntman. He doesn't look like me. Why is that? Well, couldn't find anybody. So you got to do it yourself, Bert. So sure enough, we come out of the back cave, 55 miles an hour coming out of this cave, directly at the camera, make this swerving sharp left turn, which is exactly, the stuntman did it perfectly, but unexpectedly, my door flew open. And the centrifugal force was throwing me out the door, and just by pure luck, I reached my hand behind me and caught my little finger on the gear shift knob that kept me from falling out, but pulled my finger right out of the joint. And that's incredibly painful. My door knocked the cameraman off the camera truck and knocked a big arc lamp over, which if that had fallen, somebody could have killed him. So what they stopped everything, people ran over, and they saw me, Bert, you okay? I said, yeah, but my hand is hurting. And even through the glove, my finger had already doubled in size. They said, oh, my gosh, it looks like your finger's out of joint. We got to get you to a hospital. I said, okay. And I got out of the car. Well, where's the car? Oh, well, we can't go now. What do you mean? Oh, we didn't get the shot. Oh, well, when can I go? Well, as soon as we get the shot. That was at 7:30 in the morning. I left for the emergency hospital at noon.
Man,
and that was killing me all that time. That was day one. Day two, second degree burns from explosions. Day three, a 2x4 lands on my nose, breaks my nose, broken nose. I'm telling you, I didn't think I was going to survive the first week.
That's incredible. We're talking with Burt
but
Ward.
But I'll tell you, the studio, I got to tell you, the studio
oh, yeah, please.
Smart. They were very smart. They took out a giant insurance policy on me. And I could swear by the end of the third season, they were trying to collect on that policy.
Wow. The chemistry you had with Adam West was so tremendous, and that was a big part of the success of the show, and that was a real thing. You remained friends all the way up until Adam's death.
Yes, we were very close friends. Adam and I, well, we met, believe it or not, we screen tested together, and we met on the set of the screen test 10 minutes before the screen test, and I'll tell you something, within 5 minutes, the two of us talking together were laughing. And we never stopped laughing for over 50 years. I mean, he just had the greatest personality, the funniest person. He just was just so incredibly a nice guy. And on Batman, we played up that chemistry. You know, I really believe with all the great comic duos in history, your Abbott and Costello's, Laurel and Hardy, you know, Johnny Carson, you know, all these people, they had a foil. They had someone who was just opposite, you know. I mean, Ed McMahon was just the opposite of Johnny Carson. Mm. And you know, some were tall, some were small, some were short, some were heavy, you know, whatever. There was always contrast, and I think that's what makes for great humor, contrast.
Well, we could talk Batman all day, but I want to talk about what you and your wife have been doing for many, many years now, because it's some incredible work. And as a dog owner and a dog lover, I want to hear more, first of all, about the more than 15,000 dogs that you fostered together through the years?
Yeah, well, my wife and I, we operate the largest giant breed dog rescue in the world. It's called Gentle Giant. And in 25 years of rescuing dogs, we've saved more than 15,500, every one from being put to death on their last day in an animal shelter or given up to us by an owner. And in the course of saving these dogs, all of which, by the way, they haven't lived in some other building or some other property. Every one of the 15,500 has lived in our house with us in the last 25 years. At all times, I have a minimum of 50 in my house, okay? All sizes. We have 45 different breeds. We started with the giant breeds, but now, I mean, we have all size breeds. But in the course of doing this, rescuing these animals, saving them from death, we discovered a way to help dogs live longer. And not just a little bit longer, we have doubled and tripled the lifespan of dogs, okay, up to 27 years. And including giant breed dogs that only live 6 to 8 years, now living into their 20s. And the way we do it, okay, is by creating a special feeding and care program. And we feed dogs differently, we care for dogs differently, and we came up with a dog food that is different than every other dog food in the world. It is so dramatically different. And dogs on our food, most people tell us after a month of feeding their dog Gentle Giants, which is the name of our rescue and the name of our dog food, they think they have a different dog after a month. I mean, the dog is so much healthier. Older dogs are playing like puppies again. And what we've done, because this is our charity, and we take no money from this, no salary, is that we went to Walmart and we said, we want to give you the only dog food in the world that dogs can live up to 27 years. We're going to take nothing from it. But we do ask you that you bring it to the public as inexpensively as possible. And they've done that. Our Gentle Giant dog food retails in Walmart and other grocery stores across the country at less than half the price of what you would pay for a food in a pet store that won't keep your dog living up to 27 years. So our motto became half the price and twice the life. It's our charity. And every day we get hundreds of calls from people all across America. Oh, I just heard about this, and where can I get it, and how do I feed my dog differently, and all these different things, and it all works marvelously.
And I thought one of the most fascinating things in reading about it, and we'll talk about what goes into the food itself, because that's important, but it's that way of feeding your dogs differently. First of all, getting their food up off the floor, so especially the larger breeds aren't constantly leaning forward, but also feeding them more frequently, but a little less each time, rather than those who feed a dog everything they eat for the entire day in one big meal.
Exactly. Well, let me give you the science behind it. In terms of raising the food, okay, there's two, it's food and water raised. And there is a specific height for every single dog. And that height is such that when the dog comes over to eat or drink, they never lean down. They only tilt their head down to eat or drink. They don't lean up, they don't lean down. Why is this? Why? Because two major reasons. One, there's a deadly condition in the United States that kills 10% of all the dogs. Okay, it's called bloat and torsion. Not just in the United States, actually it's worldwide. But it's, if the dog leans down and gets air into their stomach, they can bloat, okay? And or if they ingest, they lean down and they ingest food into their lungs, they can aspirate, both of which can kill the dog. So we elevate the food for that reason. But there's something else. Here's what it is. Here's how we have dogs living so long. Most dogs, by the time they're 8 or 9 years old, start to have a problem getting up. They start to have a problem walking, okay? And what happens, as I call it in the real world, within a couple of the years, the dog can't get up anymore, and you're having to try to help it outside. And if that dog weighs 50 pounds or more, most people give up. The dog is going to the bathroom on itself. They take the dog in to the vet and have it euthanized, even though the dog is perfectly alert. So what is happening? The dog's body is prematurely wearing out. By the techniques we show people how to do, the dog's body doesn't prematurely wear out. That dog's body is still active in their 20s. And how the food ties in, real quickly, I'll tell you just two gigantic things that difference from our food and everybody else. All the other dog foods, to my knowledge, inject massive amounts of fat into dogs. Mm. Why? Because it makes dogs hungrier, to make you feed them more, to make you buy more dog food. I find that unconscionable. But there's something even worse. And that is, if you've ever felt dog food, and if you have got a dog, I'm sure if you felt that food, you feel that slightly greasy feeling on the outside. Why is that there? It's there because dogs love the smell and taste of meat, but they don't like the smell and taste of fat. So in order to get dogs to eat their fat-saturated food, some manufacturers are spraying this chicken fat on the outside that dogs will eat to cover up the smell of the fat on the inside, a double whammy of fat. But worst of all, you would never take bacon grease or animal fat and pour it down your garbage disposal, right? Because you know it would clog it. And once it hardened, you'd be buying a new garbage disposal. So my point is this. When you realize that animal fat will ruin a metal garbage disposal, what do you think that animal fat is doing to the intestines and arteries of the dogs you love? Wow. Big difference. We don't have the fat on the inside, added fat, and we don't have the grease on the outside. And that alone can add 5 or 10 years to your dog's life. Just that alone. But we do a bunch of other stuff. And this is our charity.
You can get more information, by the way, by going to the website, gentlegiantsdogfood.com. As Bert mentioned, the food is available at Walmart, but also a couple of the online retailers, Chewy.com.
Walmart.com, PetSmart.com, gentlegiantsdogfood.com, which is our website, all available. And the great thing is, people can call and get help. Where, tell me, Rich, where in today's world can you get free help? I don't know any place except calling us.
Well, and it's more than just the food. As you point out on the website, it's really a program, and all that information is available. And you know, we love nothing more than our pets, and you want to keep them around. And it's not just keeping them around as long as you can, but it's that quality of life. And I've got to think that's just as valuable.
Exactly. And think of it this way. My wife, Tracy, and I spent the last 25 years of our life learning and putting on our website, which your listeners can learn in less than 25 minutes. That took us 25 years. Wow. You talk about efficiency. Every one of your listeners who's got a dog can add 5 to 10 years to their dog's life if they just follow what took us all these years to learn.
Well, it's great information. Check it out on the website, gentlegiantsdogfood.com. Bert, I kicked myself. You know, I was in that target audience. I was 8 years old when Batman made its debut in 1966. Somewhere.
Right.
Somewhere I lost that lunchbox. I would kill for that right now.
You know, it's so funny because when I would go out and make appearances, people would come up and they would pull out, for example, one of these trading cards, you know, these little trading cards that had been. Let me tell you something. That every square millimeter of that trading card was wrinkled. I mean, that trading card, and they would pull this thing out. It was barely held together to ask me to sign it. Or that launch box that you're referring to that had a million dents in it, that was their treasured lunchbox. oh, I mean, people save these things. And, you know, Adam and I would autograph them. We autograph photos. We answer questions. People love to have their photo taken with us. And, you know, it was as big a thing for the parents as it is for the kids. I mean, the kids of yesterday are the parents of today. And they get just as big a kick out of meeting Adam and I as we, you know, when they were kids.
Now, before we let you go, I do want to ask, because there have been people who had successes early in their career and got identified strongly with a role and ran from that and tried to avoid talking about it. But you and Adam as well embraced that through the years. Why did you take that approach to it?
Well, let me tell you. Think of it this way. If you have a glass that is full, right, it's full. It could be full with 100 different things in it, or you could be full with one major project that has a few other smaller ones with it, and it's still full. And our lives have been full, and with all the pleasure of that we have brought, and that's a great kick for me, to the happiness for so many kids. I had one FBI agent that I met. Last year, I was the Grand Marshal at the Huntington Beach 4th of July parade, actually one of the biggest in the nation. And in fact, it's so big that when they have over 100,000 people, the Homeland Security gets involved. There were FBI agents there and all of this. And one of them came up to me, introduced himself, and said, you know, as a kid, I might have gone in the wrong direction, but I watched Batman, and I decided to get in law enforcement, and I'm happily married with three kids, and I got a wonderful life. And I owe it all to what I learned watching Batman. I said, well, I'm sure you learned a lot of other stuff, but it was still a great compliment that we were able to do something good for people. And just like doing good for people and rescuing people in Gotham City, I never stopped rescuing. Now I'm rescuing dogs. I like to say that I was the Cape Crusader, and now I am the Canine Crusader.
Before we let you go, I just had to ask about the experience that you had with going back 50 years later and working on the animated film together back in 2016, the chance to go back and really revisit those characters.
Yes. Well, look, for me, I never left it. And I'll tell you, there were two feature films, you know, Batman, Return of the Caped Crusaders, and the second one, Batman versus Two-Face, okay? And that one had William Shatner in it. I mean, can you imagine here the two most iconic TV shows in history, Batman and Star Trek, with the actors working together? But for me, it, you know, people say, well, was it hard to get back in character? I said, no, you have to understand, when I was selected to do it, the executive producer, William Dozier, came to me and said, Bert, we interviewed 1,100 young actors, and there's a reason we picked you. I said, well, what's that? He says, because in our mind, forgetting television, if there really, for real, was a Robin, we think that you personally would be it. So we don't want you to take on some other character. What you are is what we want. So we only want you to be yourself and be enthusiastic, which is what I did for 120 episodes. So being myself, whether it's a year ago, 50 years ago, or 100 years ago, is not going to change. It's the same. So it's instantly easy for me to take on the character.
Well, you and Adam brought joy to a lot of people for many, many years, and now you're continuing to keep joy around by keeping our dogs healthier and happier and live a longer life. So, Bert, thank you so much for all you and Tracy do, and thank you so much for visiting with us this afternoon.
Well, thank you, Citizen Catmobile!
That's Bert Ward, Robin, here on the Best of Downtown on this Sunday morning. When we come back, we talk with actor Steve Guttenberg at Z62 Retro Radio.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind, identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
There's only one way Hartley's Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Newport does business. The right way. Owned and operated for over 60 years by the Hartley family, Hartley's offers the same or even better prices and discounts on vehicles as those offered at mega dealerships. And along with that comes their renowned small dealer service and exceptional attitude toward you, their customers. Hartley's values your business and your trust. You're never pushed, never pressured. No one will chase you around the lot, but no one will ignore you either. Hartley's wants you to feel comfortable at their dealership. So feel free to look around, and Hartley's professional sales staff will always be there when you need help. You'll like the place, you'll like the people, and you'll like the way they do business. The right way. The folks at Hartley's wouldn't do it any other way. Always remember, if you're out there looking around, the best deals aren't in the city, they're in the country. Hartley's Country, at the Triangle in Newport. You'll always be treated the right way at Hartley's.
Downtown Orono has a new pub and eatery, the Common Loon Public House. The Common Loon is a casual, relaxed place for great food, drink, and company in the heart of the village, and the perfect spot for a proper pint and a hearty or healthy meal. Open 7 days a week with lunch on Thursday and Friday and breakfast on the weekends, the Common Loon Public House features an eclectic menu with influences from over the ocean and close to home, serving up favorites for lunch and dinner like fish and chips, poutine, and pub burgers. Don't miss Wing Night Wednesdays, live music Fridays, and weekend mornings. The menu features hard-to-find dishes such as a full English or Irish breakfast. We're also home to the only wood-fired brick oven in town and offer a variety of pizzas and British pasties. Enjoy a selection of imported beers, local brews, and signature cocktails. Happy hour specials 3 to 5 and after 9 every night. The Common Loon Public House is the place to be for EPL matches, international rugby, the Sox pennant race, Patriots, Bruins, and Black Bears. If you follow it, they can show it on their 7 HD screens. 36 Main Street in downtown Orono, the Common Loon Public House is the place to visit before, during, and after the game.
Hi, this is Eric.
And Christine.
From the Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, inviting you to come experience everything that we have to offer.
Sure, you already know we have the most expertly cultivated selection of fine wine, craft beer, meads, and ciders in the region.
But have you tried our wide variety of cheeses, cured meats, and gourmet goods? Our exclusive line of Tavolo specialty oils and vinegars, now featuring apple cider vinegar and organic sunflower seed oil made right here in Maine? Our olive bar. And don't miss the crusty baguettes.
We can put it all together in a brilliant platter or gift basket packaged with locally made wine and cheese accessories.
And while our selection is impressive, most importantly, know that we offer the service and knowledge to help anyone from the seasoned buyer to the nervous newcomer.
Bangor Wine and Cheese, family owned and operated since 2000, is located at 86 Hammond Street in the heart of downtown Bangor.
Come in, let us cater to you and discover why we say drink, eat, live better.
A comic cosmic force brings together two women of advanced age. It's The Odd Couple meets the Golden Girls. The name of the show is Ripcord. It's a compelling look at the pleasure of a challenge and the challenge of finding pleasure. I'm Barry Newport of Penobscot Theater Company, inviting you to come experience Ripcord, March 14th through the 31st at Bangor's Historic Opera House. Tickets at 942-3333 and penobscottheater.org.
Good night, sweetheart, when it's time to go.
Our next guest on Downtown starred in some of the biggest movies of the 1980s, from Diner to Three Men and a Baby, Cocoon, the Police Academy movies. He's still very active today as an actor, director, producer, and philanthropist, appearing on shows like Ballers with Dwayne Johnson on HBO, on Veronica Mars, and recently on The Goldbergs. We had a chance to catch up with actor Steve Guttenberg. What a wonderful surprise it was to turn on my TV last week and see you appearing on The Goldbergs. How did that role come to be?
Adam F. Goldberg gave me a call. He's a really friendly showrunner and creator and very smart guy. So he called me and said, come on down for lunch. We did. We had a nice talk. And he said, one of these days I'm going to ask you to be on my show. I said, okay. Well, whenever you do, I'll be around. So he gave me a call at the beginning of the year. Had a really funny part to play one of his science professors. Science teachers at the high school. It was great. It was really great.
And a pretty well-known guest director as well for that episode.
Yeah, it was Fred. Fred is a really talented guy, and you know, he cut his teeth as a kid on Wonder Years, and he's been directing for a long time. He's very, very talented.
Looking back at your remarkable career in so many great roles, but I go back to one of my favorite movies, and it remains that of all time, Barry Levinson's Diner, back in 1982. And man, what a group of talented young actors with yourself, Kevin Bacon, Ellen Barkin, Mickey Rourke, Tim Daly, and on and on. What was that experience like?
Well, you know, the experience, it's I get asked that question quite often. And my answer is, on Diner, it was sort of like being in college, where everybody really wants that A. So you had a lot of tremendously talented and competitive actors looking for those moments. And when you do have that, and a great director, writer, Barry Levinson, you know, you're bound to find some gold. And there were many moments that were just shining bright.
You had so many great successes in the 80s, and you were certainly one of the busiest guys in Hollywood. Did you have time at all during that decade to take a breath and appreciate what was happening to you professionally?
I've been very lucky. I grew up at my parents' kitchen table, and one of the value systems that we always learned was to appreciate what you have. It's terrific to look back in the past, and it's inspiring to look in the future. But you have to look at what you have today. And I was always blessed with a really strong and character-driven family, friends who were true, honest, and loyal, and two hands that like to work. So I'm always triply blessed, I believe.
Well, I read a piece talking about you, and it said, poor Steve, he apparently is a nice guy and has lived a scandal-free life, and that Hollywood's not used to that sort of thing, I guess.
Well, you know, there are more people than you would think that do live a scandal-free life. But, you know, everybody's stolen a candy bar from the candy store. Everybody has. So if you look hard enough, you'll find it. And that's actually a sad state of affairs where our society is, that everybody's looking for the chink in the armor as opposed to looking at the armor itself and how much intensity and hard work it takes to build that armor and build a business and build a career. You know, those that live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. I truly believe that you have to stick by that.
We're talking with Steve Guttenberg here on Downtown. When I'm not on the radio, I'm a high school teacher and a high school drama director, and I was especially thrilled to see how you came up with the name of your production company.
Right. My dramatic teacher, my first drama teacher, was Mr. Kirby, and we named our company after him. He was a great inspiration, really talented, and quite encouraging.
And I often ask actors and musicians who come on the show this question, how important is it, because we're not seeing the level of support that we like these days, how important is it to have our arts education in our public schools?
Well, it's paramount to every school and every city. You must have an outlet for the arts. The arts are very, very important, not only in the social commentary, which really that's where the power lies, but in the entertainment. Because what are we really here to do but to entertain and to educate? We need the ballet. We need the opera. We need musicals. We need plays. We need poems. We need sculpture. We need painting. We need novels. We need nonfiction. We need fiction. These are really important pillars of our society. And why wouldn't you have that in a school?
That's a great point, indeed. I also want to bring up the work that you're doing on social media, which can be sometimes a pretty ugly place, but you are such a wonderful presence on Twitter, so positive and so uplifting and, well, so anti most of what's out there on social media.
Well, you know, I think that there is so much to learn from the great minds that have come before us. So instead of showing myself riding in my car or, you know, on stage somewhere or filming myself while I'm on a movie, I'd rather speak about some of the truisms that come out years ago that apply today. And for just a moment, people could read them, be influenced by them, and maybe it'll change one of their reactions or part of their day, make it a little more positive. You know, we've got enough negativity going on. Throw a little good news in there.
Well, I love it. I think it's a wonderful break from most of what's out there on social media. Well, what's the future hold for you professionally? What can we look forward to seeing you in?
Well, I just finished doing a Bruce Willis headlined film down in Puerto Rico. Had a great time doing that. And if all works out, I'll be working with a terrific director in Spain in July. I'm going to read the script today. I'm driving, so I'm going to go get it. I won't be able to announce it until later. I've got another show on the Goldbergs lots of other great opportunities.
Well, that sounds...
I sure hope I'm going to be doing a Stephen King movie one of these days.
That would be great. We'll do whatever we can to put in a good word for you here.
Well, I heard you might know the owner.
We do indeed. We do indeed. I'm sure he would love to see you in a film based on his work. Well, Steve, it's really great to talk with you. A fan of your work and also a fan of the way you comport yourself out there in the world and deal with fans and the public and that great message that you put out on Twitter. Thank you so much for making some time for us here this afternoon.
My pleasure. It's so nice of you to invite me on your show. And Maine is such a beautiful state. God bless you and God bless Maine.
That's Steve Guttenberg here on the Best of Downtown on this Sunday morning. What a good guy. All three of those guys. Burt Ward has some great stories. You know, you always wonder, are they going to want to talk too much about a show they did 50 years ago? But I love his theory about embracing that role.
Yeah, and he has. And the story he told about the producers saying, you know, just be yourself because we see you as the real life Robin. I mean, and he's embraced that and he's lived that role for the rest of his life. He is. He's upbeat. He's energetic. That's what the character was supposed to be. Yeah. And that's what he is.
And Steve Guttenberg, too, is seriously the wonderful things he puts out there on Twitter that is such a cesspool at times, but he is such a positive force out there. And you see why talking to him. What a nice guy. Thanks to Steve Guttenberg, Burt Ward, and Art Shamsky as well, author of a great new book, After the Miracle. And thanks to you for joining us on Downtown. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday afternoon. Join us tomorrow for a live program, among others, Alan Adams of The Main Edge with movie reviews on Pass the Popcorn, latest on the Red Sox as well. And Emma Wilson from the Top Gun Entrepreneur Program will join us too. Monday's Downtown starts tomorrow at 4 o'clock right here on Z62 Retro Radio. You're gonna be